Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
In the middle of the 19th century, a group of pioneering scientists and entrepreneurs came together to do something that was considered unthinkable, laying a subsea cable thousands of kilometres across the Atlantic Ocean. The completed project, which took many attempts, transformed communication across the globe. A new RTE documentary, The Cable That Changed the World, will take a closer look at how it all came about. Ruan McGann is producer and director of the documentary. He joined me in studio now. Good morning to you. Something we completely take for granted now, but have you spent any time imagining what our world might be like without that cable?
Oh my God, that's a question. It's interesting because if you think back to when these people were doing this 165 years ago, life was much, much slower than it is today. Most people didn't travel about more than 20 kilometres from their home. It would take weeks to get a letter, you know, from another country. So if a family member left, you may not hear from them for months. Life was slow, and we didn't know much about what was going on. And news of wars arrived, you know, months later. Whereas today, my God, we're just like every single morning. It's what's going on in Ukraine, what's going on in Gaza. We're one of the great advantages.
Might even be at the root of our ruination. Some might suggest get rid of the cable now, tear it up. So let's just go back 165 years to the extent of the technical challenge that this presented to them.
Well, Philip, the like electricity had only just been invented or found, discovered. It was in its infancy. They didn't have electric light bulbs. I put it that way. We were now so used to switching on a light switch. But back then it was this incredible thing, electricity. What they did figure out, though, is that if you run a charge through a cable, you'll feel it over there. And they're going, oh, maybe that's a way that we could send messages. So quick enough, they start developing these systems. And Samuel Morse then invents this really, really brilliant, simple thing of dots and dashes that they could send letters through that, through, and therefore messages along long distances over land. It was always over land. You could put up a pole easy enough and run a cable across from pole to pole to pole, but they couldn't go through water because electricity dissipates in water. So they had a problem. They couldn't cross oceans. So what Cyrus Field and these amazing scientists and business people tried to figure out is, well, is there a way that they could overcome that challenge? It took a while. The very first submarine cable was between France and Britain, and it was laid there by two brothers called Brett. And then they then laid the next cable between Ireland and Britain. So the second undersea cable was between Ireland and Britain.
Who was this man, Cyrus Field, and how was it that he had the time to devote himself to something so outlandish?
Yeah, so he's an amazing character. By the time he's 32 or 33, he's already made a huge fortune from the paper business. So paper at that time would be used for lots of things, including newspapers. So he's in modern terms, a billionaire. And he's looking for something to do. He's like a young man. He's still only 33. He's looking for something to do. And he looks at, somebody brings this project of an undersea cable to him. And he goes, oh, that's interesting. I might do that. Now, little did he know he was going to lose his fortune and many other people's fortunes over the next 8 years as he tried to succeed. It kept failing, Philip. It was a remarkably difficult challenge.
Why? Why did it fail?
Well, they didn't understand the medium. They didn't understand electricity. They were using very, very simple ships at the time. They're just Navy ships which they're trying to put cable, you know, massive drums of cable. To give you an extent of the amount of cable that they needed to run a single cable between Valentia Island and Kerry and Newfoundland, it requires that enough iron wire that would reach to the moon. So they're trying to put that onto a Navy ship that hasn't been designed for it. The remarkable thing about the story
is
that
when we do this nowadays, we have special cable-laying vessels which are designed and built to allow these enormous drums to roll cable out. These guys were just throwing this cable onto the deck and feeding it out over the edge.
You got it. Exactly that. Exactly that. And but the remarkable thing is that the technology that we use today is identical to what they invented. So we're still running cables along exactly the same route. And those ships are doing exactly the same thing, but they're designed especially for it.
How did they get beyond or around the electricity dissipating in water problem?
Well, OK, there's three really significant Irish people involved in this story. One of them is William Thompson, who's the future Lord Kelvin, and he's the greatest physicist of the time, born in Belfast. And he's just an amazing mind. And so his physics and his understanding of copper and the conducting capacities of copper allow them to sort of eventually run electricity, you know, efficiently through that medium. But the key thing was how to insulate the cable. And it's a thing called gutta percha, which is another form of rubber. And it was an Irish man, Henry Bewley, of the Bewley family that we all know from the cafes and the coffee people. He invents a thing called the thermoplastic insulator, which can take gutta percha and wrap it around these wires. They're literally making all this up as they go along. But that insulation manages to keep the electricity inside the wire.
Why Valentia?
Well, then that was Peter. So Cyrus Field is looking for somewhere to base his operation in Europe. And they quickly figure out that Ireland is probably the best idea because it's the closest to Newfoundland. So then where in Ireland? So Cyrus Field is over in London trying to raise some money, and he bumps into the 19th Knight of Kerry, Peter Fitzgerald. And he says, oh, come over to, I've got an island off the west coast of Ireland, why don't you come down there? And we'll set off from there. So remarkably, Valentia Island becomes the centre of global communications.
And very much financially better off for that decision as well.
Yeah, no, it really makes a huge difference to them for the next 50, 60 years as you get to really make... I think one person mentioned that the cable station at its height was filled with people on bank managers' salaries. Maybe 50 or 60 of them, so a remarkable difference. The UNESCO, Ireland is currently with Canada, applying for UNESCO World Heritage status for the Valentia Island cable station. And it's one of the reasons that University College Cork and RTE and Arte wanted to make this documentary as part of that effort to show what an amazing story of Ireland being once again at the heart of global communications.
How many times did it go wrong before it went right?
Oh, my God. Well, if 4 years, on four successive years, it failed. But even in those years, it failed during those years. So they might have had complete catastrophe maybe 8-9 times. And when I say catastrophe, you're talking about pulling the whole operation back to base, refitting the ships, making new cable, raising...
Because the laid cable had snapped underwater.
That's right. And it's down there forevermore. Yeah.
And there is no way of going down and repairing it.
They eventually began to figure out that you could hook it up from the bottom of the ocean. But bear in mind, it's down about 2 or 3 kilometres. So you need these vast fishing lines with kind of massive hooks on them. And then you try and guess where that sunken cable is and hook it. And then you pull it back up again.
It all sounds absolutely mad, doesn't it? And then when it went right, was there something that they were doing differently?
Well, plus ça change. The first impact of the cable, once it was working, was that bankers made vast sums of money on it, because suddenly you could make trades and you knew what the stock price was going to be faster than somebody else. And today that's still exactly the same. The people, you know, pay vast sums of money for these margins on these new optic cables, right? Then the other people who really, really benefit from it are governments, because they can control their armies and they control their colonies. And it takes quite a long time, maybe 3-4 decades, before the common person suddenly can, or eventually can afford even the price of a telegram. So it was the upper echelon society benefited first. But eventually, this technology leads to the internet. I mean, what's amazing to me is that Cyrus Field understood exactly what he was doing at the time. There's a quote, which I'll read to you, which he writes in 1858. He predicts that one day the whole earth will be belted with electric current palpitating with human thoughts and emotions. And he writes that in 1858. So he knew, he could foresee the internet.
to have said that in 1858 really is remarkably prescient, isn't it? Didn't stop him from ending life on his uppers, though, did it? Was he completely bankrupted by the whole process?
He was. He lost several fortunes during the making of it, and then he lost another because he made a vast amount of money after from the cable, but then he lost that fortune as well. So he ended up not terribly rich at the end of his life.
Tell me about the first message between the Queen and the American president.
So it's a obviously the Queen of England and the President of America, Buchanan, are very, very watching this with great interest. They're not funding it, but they're supporting it they support it. So the very first message is a telegram sent from the Queen to the President. And it's a peace on earth to all men, and which of course didn't actually happen because they hoped that this cable would bring about peace on the world. But what's interesting about it is it took, it wasn't very instantaneous, although they pretended it was, but it took about 18 or 19 hours for this message to get across the Atlantic because they had a problem with the latency of the electrical current and it kept sort of over, it would basically swamp each message and each beat of Morse code as it went over. So it wasn't fast. It was very slow. And interestingly, they didn't tell anybody this at the time.
So it wasn't dot, 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 dash, dash, dash. It was
dot, dot, squidge, 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 dot.
What is interesting now, though, 165 years on from this, is how much of our communications business we still do by undersea cable. There's only a tiny amount, a really, really small fraction that we do by satellite.
Yeah, I couldn't. That was the thing that really staggered me at the beginning when I found out that 99% of all of our mobile and all of our internet communications run under these undersea cables today. So because we think you use your mobile phone, it's going through the air and up to satellite and then back down to satellite to your phone.
No, it's
that's
not
happening at all, no. So these cables are extremely important still today. And interestingly, they run very much the same routes as those first transatlantic cables. So if you go down under the sea to where the Cyrus Field and his bunch laid that first cable, you'll see it still lying there, but right beside it, these massive fibre optic cables.
Easy to find, presumably, because there are Russian destroyers going
around
the area in great numbers now. How do we do the cable laying job now? We don't do it in vessel or in ships, do we? It's done in submarines.
Oh, well, I'm not aware of that. So certainly the people, because there's an expert on this who features in the documentary, and he very much has these massive ships which are purpose-built, and they're paying that cable out the back of them. But the remarkable thing is, imagine trying to lay a cable that is that long, like it's several thousand miles long, and it must not be broken in one single piece from Ireland to Valencia. And like these people were kind of a little bit crazy that they thought they could do this. And even when they failed, they still went again. And when they failed again, they went again. And it does kind of take that kind of mindset to achieve great change.
Well, but you know what it does? It makes the moonshot look like something, you know, quite insignificant by comparison when you consider that this was started in the 1850s.
Yeah, I think you're so right about that. And it also, if you look at the moonshot, which was a remarkable achievement, but what has it given us so far? Whereas what these people did coming out of County Kerry and crossing the Atlantic changed the world in ways that we're still coping with today and we're still figuring out today.
What has it given us? Twitter and free porn.
Yeah, well, a robotic surgery.
Fair enough.
A cure for COVID.
What was UCC's involvement in this project?
So UCC and my company, Create One, and Tyrone Productions have been making these documentaries, telling these big, epic stories of Irish history. We made the Irish Civil War, the Irish Revolution, a documentary called The Hunger, which Liam Neeson narrated. And what they do, by once people like us television makers have to collaborate with a university, it enforces a particular rigour on the research and on the thinking. And my God,
no, you can't say that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny once you start putting the magnifying glass up and you're looking for any flaw in the film, you find many. Mm-hmm. And so that's it. So it's an amazing collaboration that we have with them, and it's been going on for 5 or 6 years now.
You can watch The Cable That Changed the World tonight at 9.35 on RTE1 and the RTE Player, of course. Ruaidh McCann, thank you very much for coming into us.